On today's episode of What Is Why Anyway, I have my coworker, Julia. She works at BookBub as a featured deals editor for young adult fiction. We're talking about everything from why reading YA is so magical as a teenager to trends in the industry. So let's get into it. Hi, Julia. Welcome to What Is YA Anyway. I'm so happy to have you here. Julia is a colleague of mine at BookBub. But before we get started talking about YA and the book world, can you just tell us a bit about yourself?
Yeah. My name is Julia. I work as an editor at BookBub, where I manage a set of book genres on the site and curate free and discounted ebook deals that we run to a list of about 15 million subscribers. In addition to that, I help curate the articles and edit the articles on our blog, and I manage the company's consumer-facing social media accounts. And as part of my curation work, I am in charge of our teen and young adult category. So I work with all the big five publishers and independent authors that write in the YA genre to help them feature and promote their books.
That's amazing. So how did you get into reading, not just like young adult, but all fiction?
Yeah, as a kid, I was always a very voracious reader. And I think that that is something that has followed me through a lot of my life. My aunt likes to tell the story that when she used to babysit me when I was like 3 years old, she would find me like reading the backs of medicine bottles. And I was always like I definitely spent a lot of time at the public library with my parents growing up, especially my mom would take me. My mom has always been a big reader. So I think that her love of reading also has helped me develop my own love of reading. As a kid, I loved like the series of Unfortunate Event books. And like, I read a lot of Nancy Drew growing up and the Babysitter's Club and all of that sort of stuff. And then as a teen, I really read a lot of YA. I was like very big into like the Hunger Games era of dystopian YA.
Yes.
Was like huge for my like formative years and had like an inexplicable hold on me. I was like, any dystopian book with a love triangle in it, I was like, God, sign me up. I need it.
Me too.
Yeah, it was just like, and Sarah Dessen too. That was like my two. And I read all the Princess Diaries books by Meg Cabot. But definitely as a teen, I think like in college, I didn't read as much at the beginning of school, just because it's like that big adjustment of like, oh, I have to do so much reading for class. I don't want to read for pleasure. But then I think when I reintegrated reading for pleasure into my college life, it was actually really beneficial for me and then really helped nurture my love of reading as an adult as well.
Do you think that those young adult books you read as a teenager were formative in just like attaching you to reading and wanting to be in these worlds?
Definitely. I feel like when I was a teen and you like get so caught up in a book that like, I just remember like reading the like Twilight Saga and just like being so like finishing the first one and needing to go get the next one immediately. Right. Like, it's like, yeah. I needed my mom to take me to Borders and I needed to go get book two, like staying up all night to read. I think like having those sorts of experiences where you get so lost in a story that everything else in the world like just becomes second to whatever you're reading, like, is such a special feeling, especially when you're like a teen. Absolutely. And it definitely is like, I feel like as an adult, I'm still always chasing that. Like, I'm still looking for the story that's going to like make me cry or make me like not be able to put it down or like derail my whole day because I don't want to do any work and all I want to do is read.
What do you think it was about those young adult books that really drew you in before? Like, part of my research, I found that a lot of young adult books use the first person perspective, and some of the authors and other readers I've interviewed have talked about how that really draws them in. Is there something in the narratives that you can remember that you thought like, this is why these books are so powerful to me?
Yeah, I think the thing you brought up about first person narration is really interesting because I do think that had like a huge part of it, because I think that like when you have a really compelling narrator, it makes it in first person, it makes it so easy to get lost in a book, and B, it kind of makes it easy to like imagine yourself in the scenario too. I think as a teen, when you're reading it from the I perspective, it's very easy to self-insert. But like as an adult, I'm like very picky about reading in first person. And I think that like, there are a lot of books I put down because I don't like the first person narration so much. So I think that like, and I don't remember if I felt this picky about it when I was a teen, but it's like first person narration combined with like a really, really compelling hero, or like usually for me, I read a lot of like first person YA books with female protagonists. So like really compelling heroines and just like characters you want to follow. Like, you know, going back to the Hunger Games, it was like, I would have followed Katniss anywhere. I was like reading Katniss and Peeta fan fiction. I was like so like obsessed with her. And I think like she is such a well-crafted and believable and likable character that it's like so easy to follow in her voice and just like get caught up in like you're realizing things. Like I just even remember like in Catching Fire when she like finds out she has to go back in the Hunger Games and she's like, and you're realizing that as she's realizing it. And I just remember like, I still vividly remember like putting the book down and being like, I need to walk away from this for a second because I'm so like shocked that this just happened. And I think that that was like a really like wild feeling to like be like, oh, like feeling almost like as if I just found out I was going into the Hunger Games, right? Like it's so like that shock of it, I think.
Why do you think, why does it feel different for you when you're reading an adult book in first person versus reading the young adult in first person?
I think my tastes have changed as an adult reader from when I was a teen. And I think that that's probably a big part of it. I think when I was a teen, I was very like, I found something I liked and I kept chasing the same sorts of stories over and over again. Whereas now as an adult, I think that my reading tastes are much more wide and I'm reading like outside of characters who emulate my own voice. Like I think when I was 16, I was reading stories starring characters who spoke like who were teenagers like I was and who like whose way of speaking felt very familiar to me and who was like easy. And the stories were kind of like, I liked really similar sorts of stories. I liked, you know, like the dystopian stories and sometimes some fantasy. I love the love triangles. I love like the plucky heroine who kind of like, you know, she was a little bit different than the other girls. And like, those were the types of stories I was devouring. And now I think like, since I'm reading a lot outside of different genres, I think it's like, sometimes there are certain narrators that I'm like, I don't necessarily want to be reading in your voice.
Yeah.
And it's not that the story itself is a problem for me. It's just that like the voice is not like a voice I want to follow. And it's interesting to use it because I feel like now actually as like a mid-20s person, like a lot of the voice, like a lot of the first person narration I'm like more interested in following is like Sally Rooney and like these like millennial women, like Dolly Alderton and like these millennial women who are writing more in a way, actually, I think that also again emulates my own voice and my own experiences. And like Candace Cardi-Williams is Queenie, I feel like felt like that too, where it's like a woman who's in her 20s and she's a little bit more of a hot mess. And she like, so I think I just realized that like a lot of the first person narration I like to read feels like either has to be like a really compelling voice that I'm like kind of drawn in by or someone that feels like relatable to me in some way. So it's like I can like live in her head that closely or his or their head and not feel like I'm bothered by, not like bothered, but I'm like, I think sometimes a character can feel a little grating to me.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that one of the things that pulled you in was like having that compelling character that you felt like you could relate to that was well-crafted and well-built. And a lot of what the stigma around YA is that these characters or these books are not like layered and in depth because they're more accessible to their audience who has a lower reading level, just sheerly by the fact that they're younger.
Yeah.
What do you think about arguments that say YA is less than, especially working in the industry, seeing so many books coming out?
I was actually just talking to my partner about this earlier. And like, I think there's a problem with YA that doesn't lie within the writing of YA, that lies within like a readership of older people, predominantly like older women who are reading YA, who are like, feel like YA is less than some of the adult books that might be more up to their reading level because it's not written for them. And they want that YA to still be written for them. And it's just not anymore. You know, like I think a lot of YA protagonists probably felt like really well drawn to me because I was living those experiences, right? Like you're living that sort of like experiencing first love, experiencing like the messiness of high school and the messiness of like, I don't know, hormones and emotions and like figuring out who you are and coming of age. And I think like that is not relatable so much anymore to people that are like in their 20s and 30s when you feel like you're more like later 20s and 30s, you know, feeling like you're coming into your own. But I think there's still like a community of people who read YA who are adults, which is totally fine. You know, I still read YA as an adult, but I read it within the context of like, this was not written for me. I'm enjoying it. And I think it is, you know, an interesting, I read like, I feel like a lot of YA thrillers, like Karen McManus, Diana Urban, Holly Jackson, and that kind of like cohort. But I like can acknowledge that those books aren't written for me.
Yeah. You know?
I think like even just like recently I read the Cool Prince books for the first time.
Yep.
Which I was like, if I was between the ages of 15 and 19 reading these, I would have like had a conniption. Like I would have been so obsessed with them that it would have like consumed my whole entire life. And like as an adult, I like could recognize like, oh, like these are like really well written, like an interesting stories for teenagers, but these aren't so much for me anymore. And that's okay. Yep. So I think that it's just like that sort of, I think people have trouble like being like, well, I'm not the main character anymore. So like, you know, this is bad because like, you know, like YA reviews that I see from like adult women that are like, I thought that this character made like a lot of decisions I disagreed with, or like, I didn't really understand why they were so like reckless and like all their, and I'm like, because they're 16 years old and you're 34.
Yes, exactly.
It doesn't feel like it's relevant to you anymore. So I think that that is like a huge part of, I think a lot of the conversation around YA is like a lot of the people having these conversations have aged out of the demographic that YA is written for and like cannot seem to let go of the fact that YA is not written for them.
Yes. It's hard to separate, especially like even when you're reading it. And also I think scholars, when they're studying it, to separate, like this is written in this way because it's for a certain person. It's not written like, and that's a craft in and of itself to be able to take a book and write it and make it compelling and fast paced and still layered and appeal to a certain audience. That is a craft, but it's just not the same as writing something in like the Sally Rooney-esque, you know, narration where like that's a craft in and of itself. She's doing something very particular for 20 something year old women that might not appeal to like a 40 year old man or something.
Exactly.
And he might say the same thing being like, this narration is not good, whatever. And it's hard to separate those feelings.
Yeah. I think that that is like a big, I feel like that's like a lot of the conversations I've seen around YA. I'm just like, oh, like this is just people that like have the nostalgia of remembering, like, you know, like you have the, like, I feel like as it, like, as I've gotten older, like I have a nostalgia for how I used to feel when I was reading YA, but you're not going to be able to recapture that if you're reading, you know, reading more YA expecting it to make you feel like you did when you were 16.
Yeah.
And I think that there are like a lot of people that kind of expect YA to be giving them that same feeling, but like not acknowledging that like they as a person have like grown mentally and emotionally since they were reading it. So like when you're reading about a teenager like making all these reckless decisions in love and like, you know, being impulsive and not knowing everything that she's supposed to be doing and not making a lot of right decisions, and you're like, you're banging your head against the wall, you're like, why are you doing this? Like, why are you acting like this? It's like literally because it was written for a 16-year-old. And I think there are a lot of so many YA authors who write these amazing books for teenagers that show how teenagers actually behave and like feel relevant to their behavior. And that's just, you know, not written for adults.
Yeah.
Adults can enjoy it, but it's not like written primarily with them in mind, you know?
When have you ever gone back and reread some of your favorite YA books as an older adult? And did you have a different feeling when you did so?
It's funny that you say that because like I have not, but I've really been thinking strongly about going back and rereading all the Hunger Games books because I have them. Not quite the same. My mom and I did like a rewatch of the movies kind of early on during the pandemic when I was like at home with my parents. And like, I still felt like, you know, like you get so sucked into it. Like, I feel like I still had like, even like with the movies, I still had like that level of like, you know, nostalgia and also being like, this holds up. And then everybody that asked me, I'm like, they still hold up, actually. Thank you.
Yes.
But yeah, I think I have been thinking about it because I've been curious to see if like it would still like it's been so many years since I've read them. And I think those were really like the YA books that like changed me. And also like those are like the Princess Diaries books, which I'm like, I feel like if I go back now and I read them, I'm going to be like, Mia's so annoying.
Yeah.
So I was like, 15, I'm reading all of them. I was like, this is exactly how I would behave if I were a teen princess. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just,
I feel this in my soul. This
exactly. I'm like, Mia's right to be behaving in this way. And everyone's being mean to her. Like, I always say, like, I feel like I realized I reached adulthood when I was watching The Princess Diaries 2. And I was like, why doesn't she marry this guy that's like nice and normal and like is a prince? Like, I love Chris Pine in that movie, but I was like, this guy seems so kind and sensible. And like,
they I know. Can,
like, you can like build a foundation of love from this relationship.
I know. I'm like, you guys could be fond of one another.
And it can grow into love. And, you know, like, Mia, maybe you do have a sense of duty. And like, when I was a teen, I was like, this is so stupid. You know, I think that it's like funny to think about, like, you know, and I think that that is also what I think about in the context of YA, like, you know, how I have changed and how, like, I've been saying, like, and how that changes my perception of these characters. But I am thinking about doing a Hunger Games reread.
I highly suggest doing Hunger Games reread. Hunger Games was also my like absolute favorite. Yeah. And because now I'm doing a lot of like graduate work on these books, I went back and reread them with like a theory lens and they held up. So
Suzanne Collins is like that girl. Like, no, who's out there doing it like her? I haven't read the prequel yet, but I'm planning on it before the movie comes out. I've heard like mixed to positive things about it.
It was like, I need to do a reread of it before the movie comes out. I read it when it came out and it was good. Like, she does still capture you in that same, like, you're just pulled into this perspective.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of her magic qualities. I don't know what wizardry she crafts, but she does. And because it's told from the perspective of Snow, who like is kind of a little bit evil, you still are like, I want to be here with you.
Yeah.
Which was like, I think the key
the tough part
to that book. Yeah. But definitely Hunger Games rereads. I highly recommend. They're very good. And there's a lot of like, a lot of scholars have actually done other work on the Hunger Games. And it's fascinating to see people pick apart Suzanne Collins and have it still hold up to the scrutiny. Yeah. It's like,
it's just like, I feel like, you know, I still look back at them and I'm like, these books were like very thoughtful. Like, just like, even in the way that they portray like our society's obsession with like kind of like, you know, the consumption of things like reality TV. I feel like as an adult, like I've gotten into like watching a lot of reality TV, and you can even look at something like The Hunger Games as like a dystopic, dystopian like analysis of the way that we like kind of exploit people's like struggles and like, I don't know, bad behaviors for our own like entertainment and personal gain. And I think that that is like also an interesting angle of it that I didn't think about when I was a teenager, but now, like, you know, how it captured society in like ways that I wasn't thinking about when I'm 16. And I'm still thinking, like, I am thinking about now as like my worldview has expanded.
Yeah. You notice different things when you go back that obviously the adult authors are doing.
Yeah. And,
like, saying, but when you're a teenager, you don't necessarily pick up on that, especially like, I think I was maybe like 12 or 13 when I read The Hunger Games. So I definitely wasn't picking up on all the nuances of like politics and what was going on. Exactly.
Like all the like the things that I think Suzanne Collins has to say about like, the political landscape and like society at large were not things I was thinking about when I was a teen, when I was just like, damn, that's crazy. Like, right. Yes. just like, this is so wild.
Definitely. I think a lot of other books do that too, that you don't necessarily pick up on some of the, even like the characters' emotions that they're feeling, you have a relation to them and you can be like, yeah, I felt that too. But then when you go back and read it, you're like, this is so much deeper than just like this character is nervous or something. So you also work in the book industry. Can you talk a bit about that and how you like pick books for, or can you talk about the featured deals and just explain that for people who aren't familiar?
Yeah. So BookBub, where I work, our main product is what is called like the BookBub. I think it's called like your daily deals email. Internally, we call it the featured deals email. So it's an email that goes out every day. Subscribers can join on our website for free, and you go on and you make an account and you check off like, I read these genres, like, you know, YA, I read mysteries and thrillers, I read historical fiction, and I really like biographies and memoirs, let's say. And then every morning you get an email in your inbox with a curated list of ebook deals in the genres that you like to read, and they're between free and like $4.99 usually. Mm-hmm. And that is the product that one of the products that I work on. And how that process works kind of from my end is I get, for all of the categories I manage, including teen and YA, I get submissions in from publisher partners, which is all of the big five publishers, as well as small presses and independent authors as well. And I evaluate all of these submissions based on a lot of different factors, based on historical performance of both the author and the book. Have we run this book before? Have our readers really liked it? Have we run this author before and our readers really like this author? Also, like analyzing, we do a lot of work on analyzing trends and content elements that we found that our readers have liked in the past. So is this a plot that we know that they really like? Is this an emerging trend that we're thinking that they like and we want to be gathering more data points on? Is this something that is maybe on the fence, but it's really such a compelling book and I want to maintain like a diversity of content in the category, so I'm going to run it anyway. Also, you know, things like, is this a huge author? You know, if they send me like a Holly Black book, no matter literally what it is, I'm going to, you know, accept it and run it because our readers are hungry for her content. She has like a ton of followers on our website and, you know, or if it's like the biggest, buzziest debut novel that's coming out, or that came out maybe like 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And I know it has like a lot of acclaim. So it's just like all of these factors I basically take in and combine with like, you know, what the upcoming schedule looks like, because we only have so many spots that were allotted per day and week and month. And I select the books that run in that email every day. So any books that you see in your book club email are coming from a human being and not like a robot algorithm. So that's kind of what a lot of my day-to-day work looks like. So I I'm pretty familiar with like what the current YA landscape looks like, because I have to kind of know what trends are popular and then figure out how they're like being, how that's translating into what we're specifically seeing BookBub YA readers like, and also just like know what the big books and authors on the scene are, because it helps me make really informed decisions about books that I want to try to make sure we're featuring to our readers, so they're getting like the best of the best.
Working so closely in this, what are some authors that you see really like being really popular right now, and some of the trends that you're noticing either just, well, both in the industry at large and in your BookBub readers?
Sure. I think we're seeing a lot of the books that are huge on BookTok right now, Maya, that's definitely like translating to our readers here. Mm-hmm. You know, they love, like I said, they love Holly Black. They love Bridget Kemmerer, who wrote the Curse So Dark and Lonely series, and has written like many other books. They are really liking like I'm blanking on her name. Who wrote Tomi Adeyemi? We've run her series a couple times. They really are liking like all sorts of fantasy is always a really big hit with our readers, and I think YA fantasy is just like booming. In general, I think we've actually been seeing like a huge boom in YA mysteries and thrillers.
Yeah.
Which I think has become like a pretty huge, I think it's become like really popular on like BookTok and in like YA book social media spaces. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that translate, like authors like Karen McManus were doing well, but for a while we were kind of only seeing strong performances with like the really big name authors. And now we're seeing that like they're liking kind of these content trends regardless of the author's platform and notoriety. So, you know, the bigger authors, like, you know, like I said, Karen McManus and like Holly Jackson, but also like, you know, maybe smaller or newer debut YA thrillers are doing really well as nicely as well. And then they're also really just liking books that feature diverse characters and stories and deal with like contemporary issues that feel relevant and relatable to them. And I think that is like a consistent trend we're always seeing across YA, is it is a genre that people are really interested in reading. About diverse voices and experiences, and featuring like a wide variety of diverse characters and different narratives. So I think that that's something that we see in contemporary YA, we see in YA fantasy and YA mysteries and thrillers.
And speaking to the diversity point, YA, I think, has been doing a really good job of becoming more and more diverse. What do you see happening in that field in terms of representation on your end?
Yeah, I think we're just seeing like a really like notable, I feel like, expanse of stories that are being told. I think that we're seeing like a lot of different, you know, it's not just like there's like one big book by an author of color that everybody is talking about. There are like a lot of different books across like a lot of different subgenres in YA. Like I think an example that's coming to my mind immediately is All Boys Aren't Blue, which is a memoir by George Johnson, I believe. Mm-hmm. Normally we see like our book club feature deals readers aren't so much interested in nonfiction.
Mm-hmm.
But we saw that that nonfiction performance did really nicely. And I think it's just because it was speaking to a like a diverse viewpoint from the perspective of a person that lived it. I think they're always interested in reading about lived experiences. They're also really liking like diversity in the LGBTQ space. I think are why readers really like reading about especially things like contemporary romances,
mm-hmm.
but that feature characters that aren't just like a cis white heterosexual couple, right? Like they just want to see these sorts of stories that we've been seeing from popular YA fiction authors, but featuring characters that maybe reflect more of the experience that they've had in their own lives.
Yeah. And I'm thinking back to like genre trends in YA, talking about it now with the thrillers and the memoirs, which is really interesting because when I was talking on a previous episode with one of the scholars, we were trying to like surmise what genres might be coming up and about right now. And we said thrillers and memoirs. So that's fascinating. Yeah. That it's working.
Yeah, we actually also I think we recently featured I'm going to look up the data on this so I can give you the right name. We featured Apple by Eric Gansworth, which is a memoir from an Indigenous author about growing up on a reservation in New York. And they like that one really performed super strongly, which was awesome to see. And I think like also speaks to this idea that like they are interested in memoirs, which is something they haven't been interested in the past when it like is like opening them up potentially to a new experience, mm-hmm. or like for like Indigenous readers, for example, like speaking to an experience that they have had that has not traditionally been written about in the YA space.
Yeah. Now, do you notice like in the early 2010s, like with the dystopia, when that was like a super prolific genre, there was kind of like this almost bell curve of like you had the, you know, Hunger Games, Twilight, those ones that like go up. And then there was this peak of like so many dystopia coming out, and now it's trailed off a bit. Obviously, there's still a lot of YA dystopia. But do you see that kind of happening in, say, the mysteries and thriller genre? Like, was it slowly upticking and now it's reached like a higher point? And what do you think contributes to the way the genres trend?
That's a great question. I don't know if I feel like I'm seeing like an oversaturation right now in the market of mysteries and thrillers. I think if I think that there's an oversaturation anywhere in the market, it's probably in like the YA fantasy space, which I think we've been seeing for probably a pretty long time. And it's challenging because I think that there are like a lot of really interesting new YA fantasy novels that are coming out, but they're just kind of like entering a pretty overcrowded market right now. And I think it is like probably hard for a lot of these authors to break out. But yeah, I think it becomes, I'll be curious to see like how something like Book Talk affects this sort of like oversaturation and this bell curve that you're talking about. Because I think that like, when I think about like those dystopias of like the 2010s that you were talking about, I think about how and I think this does happen in the book industry all the time, where you see one book do really well, and then every publisher all of a sudden is trying to find the next version of that book. Yeah. I think that happened in the adult space, for example, with like Gone Girl. I think there was a phase that every single book was called the next Gone Girl. And then like that kind of became oversaturated, like the psychological suspense space. And then that kind of, not that it's like really tapered off, I think there's still like a lot of psychological suspense novels coming out, but I think it is like a very crowded market. Or even if you look at like in the adult space, like Sally Rooney, you know, I think that like a big author comes out and is really successful, and then every publisher all of a sudden is trying to like find their own version of that author. And I think that that is kind of what a lot of the times will lead to this sort of oversaturation is the rat race of it all, of just like, you know, it's all about the financials. And I feel like with something with like Book Talk, it's like, you know, who are the big Book Talk authors? How do we find the next big Book Talk author? How do we, you know, if they love like Colleen Hoover, as an adult, like who's our next Colleen Hoover, who's our next Holly Black, who's writing the next Big Fay romance, right? Like, I think that a lot of the bell curve of it and like the whole, you know, like the peak of a certain subgenre and then the fall of it is just publishers trying to capitalize on a trend. And then when too many people jump on that bandwagon, the market becomes oversaturated. And I think readers kind of even grow out of like interests of these sorts of things. And then the next big trend comes up and the next popular thing comes up. And publishers are still releasing all of these books that they bought in this old trend they were trying to capitalize on, while readers' tastes have already evolved into something else.
Now, book talk is so huge these days with like just putting a, like they bring a lot of sales into publishing.
Yeah, it's been huge. I was just reading Publisher's Lunch today, which is like the daily publishing industry newsletter that comes out, and it referred to adult fiction as Colleen Hoover fiction, just because she's like, which is fascinating to me because like my mom has been reading Colleen Hoover since she was an independent author, like for 10 to 15 years. And my mom is now to me, like, why are people talking about her so much? Like I've been reading her books forever. Like my mom like pre-orders all her books and all of a sudden she's like the it girl, right? Like it's like, it's just interesting, but sorry.
I saw, speaking of Colleen Hoover, I just saw an article, I think it was like yesterday, and they said that she sold now this year, she sold more copies than the Bible, as well as like John Grisham and someone else combined, like just millions.
I think she has half of her books on the paperback New York Times bestseller list.
Yeah, six out of 10 are her books. Like that is just absolutely crazy. Speaking to the power of book talk, but like before book talk existed, what was it that was driving these trends in the publishing industry?
That's a great question. I really feel like it was like just word of mouth in different ways. I think that it was like I feel like publishing, for all of the marketing efforts that exist, so much of a book's kind of unexpected success can be attributed to word of mouth campaigns. It's like, when you're reading a book that is so good and you like tell your team and you tell your friends about it and then all of them are reading it and you're all reading it together and you're lending copies. And, you know, I do think there is like things like probably in the past, like not that librarians don't have a significant impact now, but I think like school librarians back in a space were like back in a time where people didn't have access to just a million book recommendations on their phone, school librarians, Barnes and Noble, the Barnes and Noble, like YA section and like those little table displays that they do that are now like book talk themed. But yeah, I think that like word of mouth has always been kind of an under acknowledged marketing tool in the book industry, just because like at the end of the day, it's like, if you read a book, if people are talking about your book, like I think everybody's most likely to take a recommendation from like a trusted friend than like the internet. Right. And I think the book talk has just provided people to like provided people with word of mouth marketing, but just on like a much more significant scale.
Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Definitely. Because a lot of people on Book Talk are talking to you. And I think you get this sense of like, you trust whoever's creating the content. Yes. And they're saying like, I'm reading this book and this is what it's about. And it's really good. And you feel as though you're having a conversation with a trusted friend.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now I have a question related to marketing. I was talking with Rachel Lynn Solomon, the author, and we were discussing book covers in the young adult genre and like how they've changed. And I also had an interesting conversation with one of my friends, and she was discussing the Shatter Me book covers. And now Shatter Me is kind of like blown up on Book Talk, and they've changed all of the covers. And at the beginning, there was like this girl in a ball gown, which wasn't really related to the books at all. Do you see on feature deals, or just like, I guess, being in the space in general, that certain book covers in the young adult genre do better than others? Like, are people attracted to a more like cartoon image or photos?
That's a great question. I think that working in book marketing has really taught me like you actually do judge a book by its cover, you know, despite the like sentiment of to the contrary that I feel like has become, you know, such an idiom in our lives. Like it really does make such a huge impact when a book has a really interesting professional looking cover. I feel like cover trends can definitely vary genre to genre, but I think like I feel like I don't think I'm seeing so much like in the YA fantasy space. I feel like it's like the covers where like the title is really big and then they're like kind of the smaller like drawings of like little castles and stuff. You know what I mean? Like I
I
don't
know
know if
what
this
you mean.
makes sense. Like I think like and thinking to like the Six of Crows cover, right? Like I feel like or like even the Cruel Prince cover. Like I feel like these like very glossy, like looking like kind of usually like maybe some sparkle in them with like the big title and then the like kind of intricate drawings around them is pretty popular. I think like the cartoony cover is definitely in like contemporary like romance and contemporary issue books are really popular in the same way that they're popular in contemporary romances like adults. Like I feel like in like the Becky Albertalli covers and like Julie Murphy and all of these authors that are writing more like traditional not that contemporary is traditional, but just like modern YA that is not fantastical in some way. You've got like your nice kind of covers of like two people that might be love interests or like might be the main characters, or like a group of friends or something. Like I feel like that's really those cartoony covers are like much more big in contemporary than they are in fantasy. And thrillers, I just feel like usually it's like gotta have kind of the dark element, I guess. Like, I don't even know how to like quite explain it, but like there's usually like an X over one of the O's or something like that. Or like it's like some of the font is like blood red, or like, you know, it's written, the title's written in kind of like as if like a murderer had scrawled it on a chalkboard or something like that. Like I think that it's just like capturing, it's like a glossy cover that feels like a book you already know and like, but it's also like capturing the vibes of the genre, if that makes sense. YA is an interesting space because it is not like when you're just talking about a genre like mystery and thrillers or like romance, and there's like, it's like not so much a genre as it is like an audience. You know what I mean? Like we don't talk about adult fiction in the same, quite in the same way we talk about YA fiction, right? Or we don't like lump it all together. But in YA, and I think about this a lot in the context of my work, because when I'm evaluating books to run to our teen and YA category, it's like I'm really evaluating books across multiple different genres that just are under a YA audience. So it's like you have to have a little bit more of like a breadth of knowledge that you don't have if you're just like targeting in on something just like crime fiction and thrillers and or like historical fiction or something like that. You know, like it's like you can write YA, but you can write any sort of genre really that you want. So I think that cover trends really are much more aligned with like subgenres than they are with like the genre as a whole.
Another slightly confusing thing about why like the genre thing is big when I'm studying it, it's hard to decipher like some of the like to pick apart the books in different genres all under the YA category. Another thing that has been contested is the exact like ages it's marketed to, and now we have the new adult category, which is like early 20s. Do you differentiate in BookBub between YA and new adult? Because sometimes it gets like, especially in Barnes and Noble, there isn't a quote unquote new adult section. Like you don't have the books just in one space where it's this age range. Sometimes they get like subsumed in young adult, or they're just in adult and you don't know what the age range is. Do you differentiate at BookBub?
We do have a new adult romance category. So we do differentiate like what like any romance that features like college students or people in their early 20s is going to go to new adult romance as opposed to going to YA or adult contemporary romance. Otherwise we don't do much differentiation. In the YA space, I pretty much have like a hard stop at like 18. It's like I'm looking for protagonists from the ages of 13 to 18, maybe 19 if the book still feels like it's like geared towards a YA audience, in like the way that it's being marketed or the like way that it's being reviewed by readers. Obviously, like, you know, making sure that it's like not containing any sort of content that feels like it's like really geared towards adults, despite the age of the characters. But usually any like fantasy books that feel aged out of YA are going to go to our fantasy or supernatural suspense categories, and any thrillers that feel like the characters are, you know, even if it features characters in that age, it feels like it's marketed toward an adult audience. Like, we don't, or if it's it like a college dark academia thriller isn't going to go to a new adult thriller category. It's just going to go to regular crime fiction and thrillers, okay. Right?
Yeah.
I think new adult is interesting because I feel like for many years it's been a thing that people have been trying to get to take off, and it just kind of hasn't gotten there, you know?
Yes. Yeah. It's very interesting because it's still really only in the romance space that you associate new adult, even though there are like college protagonists in, like you said, dark academia thrillers.
I was about to say, you think about something like Ninth House, which is like a dark academia fantasy featuring a college age protagonist, mm-hmm. or like, yeah, like there really is, I think with dark academia being so popular and it not really being classified as new adult, it's like a testament to the fact that like new adult is just not something that's taking off the larger reading community at large. And I think that it's like, it's challenging because I think there is like a market there for that age. But I do think that like that those books just tend to be read by adult readers and therefore like marketed toward adult readers.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. My question is, in the YA category, now that it's taken off so much and there's so many books coming out, how do you feel that the writing has gotten, quote unquote, like better, that it's more developed than some of the earlier books when this genre was just starting to be really a high priority to publishers?
Yeah, I definitely think there's like a lot of really great writing in the YA genre. I think there's like a lot of really smart writers who are writing in complex and interesting ways while still making it accessible to their audience. And I think that is like not easy to do. You mm-hmm. know, it's hard to like craft prose that feels very dynamic and interesting and absorbing while still keeping a younger audience and a younger readership in mind. And I think that a lot of, as the genre has evolved, I think a lot of readers are doing a really, or a lot of writers are doing a really thoughtful job of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely think there is like some very great YA writing that goes back to even so far as you think of like YA classics back in like the 70s and 80s, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
90s and 2000s, you know, I think Meg Cabot was just like, the way that she wrote about teenage girls and mm-hmm. like created this world and still like wrote in a very like engaging, I think funny writing is really hard to do. And I think there's like a lot of really funny writing in YA. So I think like overall, I think that the quality of writing has increased as the industry has become more widely, or as the industry has become more widely accepting of YA as like mm-hmm. a thing that adults read as well.
Yeah.
And a thing that like, and a genre that is like deserving of recognition of craft in the same way that maybe like adult, you know, you think about authors like Melinda Lowe and Last Night at the Telegraph Club, mm-hmm. like that is like a beautiful book. And there are so many like beautiful YA novels that come out that are just like really compellingly written. And they're just like, also still, it feels like you could let a, you know, 14, 15 year old pick it up and they're going to still just like appreciate it and enjoy it, be drawn in by the plot. But the writing is still like complex and very beautiful.
Absolutely. I think that's a perfect sentiment to lead into my final question, which is, if you could choose one YA book to read for the rest of your life, which one would it be and why?
That's a great question. I think I would have to pick Six of Crows. Ooh. By Leigh Bardugo, with my caveat being that I'm picking the full duology.
Those books are so complex.
I remember in 2018 when I was a co-op at BookBub asking Danielle Perrault, who was the YA editor at the time, for recommendations of like a good YA book to read.
Yeah.
And she had recommended Six of Crows to me. And that was like the first time in a while that I had that reading experience that I like remember having when I was a teen, of just like literally not being able to put it down, being like so drawn in by the characters and the character dynamics and the subplots and the romances, and like going and or like picking up the sequel immediately after. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I was like, I need to know what happens right now. Right. Yes. Like, it's just like, I was like, what is going on? Like, I think that those books, like, being able to read those when I was like 21 years old and then feel like I was 15 again was like a very cool feeling. And yeah, I think Leo Hugo is an author that writes these like complex and intricate fantasy worlds, but still does it in a way kind of what we were talking about earlier about, like, you know, still writing it with her teen audience in mind, but absolutely, like really capturing that crossover area where it's like written for teens, but as an adult, you can still really enjoy it and be very captivated by the characters. And I just like, I could definitely go back. I have done a reread of those books. I think I did before the show came out because I just like was so captivated by them.
They're so good. I remember I felt the same way. And I love my favorite duology by her is the King of Scars one.
Yes. Those two. Oh my God. She just like, I'm like Nikolai till I die. I love him.
Oh, absolutely. I would do anything for that character. When I was reading it, I was like, this is what I felt like when I was reading.
Literally.
As a teenager, like I was so consumed by this character.
Yeah. And it's just like, you get so sucked into the world. Like, it's like, she just reads. And I read them out of, like, I didn't read Shadow and Bone before I read Six of Crows. I read them after. And I like still, I didn't feel like I missed a beat. You know what I mean? Like I went, as I read Shadow and Bone, I was like, oh, this was a reference that they made in Six of Crows that I didn't even think about. But I feel like she she doesn't do like the readers the disservice of being like, you have to start with this original trilogy in order to enjoy these later on books. And I feel like, I think that I always tell people Six of Crows is like the introduction that you should go into in that world because it's just like such a perfect book. It is such a perfect book. And I'm like, this will be like, you'll love this story so much that you're going to like want to read everything that she wrote in this universe.
The plot is just beautifully done. So intricate. I
love her. I'm like waiting for the Ninth House sequel, but I'm also like, I forget everything that happened in Ninth House. And I don't even care.
I'll read it. Whatever it is.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much for talking to me today. This has been a great conversation and I hope you enjoyed it too.
Thank you. This was so much fun. Such a nice little lunch chat. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. It's always so fascinating to hear from someone working in the young adult space about what is going on. And I think that what Julia said is right. We are seeing so much new, great young adult fiction coming out that I can't wait to get my hands on and can't wait to read. And I hope that you enjoyed listening to an inside scoop on the category. All right, I'll see you next time. Bye.